Mission Chats with John Crowe.
Wonderful to have you back listening to Mission Chats. Thank you, as always, for making the time to listen to what we have going on. Before we start this week's chat, I want to say a thank you to a friend of mine in Germany who I've known for a number of years, and he is my very first supporter of this podcast as far as helping out a little bit financially. Thank you so much for your contribution each month just to help cover these costs. That's a huge help. And as we kick this off, I'd love to ask you to think about that too, just to help cover some of the costs of hosting and running this podcast. Today's guest is someone I met 12 years ago. She came through here, a little town of Florence, where I live in South Carolina, and shared a little bit about her ministry with our ministry that I was with at the time. And I've been following her for a while, and I thought it might be wonderful to hear a little bit about who she is, the journey she's been on, and the ministry that she heads up for missionaries and their children. So, Michelle, without further ado, I would just love for you to share with us just your own journey, what the Lord has had you on, and how you got to this point where you are today.
Yeah, I'm happy to share, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation. This is where things become a little bit difficult for me, because I am a missionary's kid, an MK, and we tend to overshare. So when somebody asks us what our story is, we tend to go straight to the, you know, the most intimate, deepest stuff. Right. So I'm going to try to find that fine line.
Yep.
And not traumatize any of us in the process. I actually grew up in a missionary family. My parents became missionaries to France about a year and a half before I was born. They went over in the late 60s, and they taught at the European Bible Institute, which in those days was hosted by a castle in France. So I literally grew up in an 18th century castle. Awesome. In this town north of Paris called La Morlaix, which to my romantic little self, very sensitive child, felt like just bliss to be able to roam those halls and play outside and on the grounds of this castle. My family life was saturated with faith, obviously. They were Christian missionaries teaching at a Bible school, so it was all kind of built in. The challenge of that is that, in a sense, faith was a bit of the family business. So what we did, it was what my parents were called to, it is what metronomed our lives. And so much of my life was wonderful. I would not give up the blessing and the richness of growing up in France under those circumstances. But there was also kind of a muddled faith because of the family business aspect of things. And I did see people living out their faith and having an intimate relationship with Jesus. But it seemed that what motivated action often was more strategic or more business related than something that came out of that intimate relationship. I love France. I love the pastries. I love riding my bike everywhere. I love that things were safe. We could go anywhere in town and not worry about our safety. Yeah. All of that was fantastic. And I went to French schools, which were those days in that place.
Right.
There's no other word for it but abusive. Physically and emotionally, they believed that pain and humiliation were good inspirations for better grades. So they didn't hold back from calling me stupid, telling me I'd never amount to anything, pulling my ear until it bled, putting a dunce cap on my head, and instructing my classmates to mock me to make me a better student. And because I was a good little MK, missionary's kid, I'm going to be using that term a lot, and because everybody else was being treated the same way, I never thought to tell my parents about this, because I thought it was normal for adults in authority over me to treat me the way these teachers were treating me. Sure. Part of the MK piece, and I know that some of your listeners might have MKs or be MKs or hope to have MKs.
Right.
Part of the MK piece is that we live under something I call the tyranny of shoulds, which is this impression that the world at large is telling us what we should be by virtue of our parents choosing to become missionaries. Sure. Some of them feel minor, but the accumulation of all of them can feel oppressive, especially to sensitive souls like I was. So because I'm an MK, I should always be happy. I should never complain. I should get good grades. I should have the faith of a 30-year-old. I should have my life focused on nothing but God and good things. I should just be nearly perfect in every aspect of my life, because the world is watching and the missionary community is watching and God is watching. And for me to fail at any of those would bring shame to all of the above, God, the missionary world, world and the world at large.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. And it's not that somebody sits down and tells me when I'm four, Michelle, you need to live up to these unreachable standards. Yep. It's this sense that maybe, or no, not even maybe, it's this sense that the world must expect this of me because of the status of being an MK, status being used in a non-good or bad
right.
way. So the shoulds were really hard on me growing up. They were hard enough that, again, I didn't report to my parents when school became toxic. I didn't report to them when there were instances of abuse in my childhood, because if I reported to them and then that hurt their ministry, then I was harming God's work, right? Irrational conclusion. Yeah. But in my little mind,
it made sense,
right, at that age. So I kept a lot of it to myself. Part of the shoulds is that my faith, again, should be superior than most of my peers. And my faith was not, because of a lot of the hard, abusive, traumatic experiences of my childhood. I had trouble believing that, number one, that there was a God. And if there was a God, that he was good, because he called my parents and here we are in France and these traumatic things are happening to me. And why didn't he stop it? Mm-hmm. I never mentioned that to anybody because of the shoulds. Therefore, my faith or my view of God were seriously damaged during those days. And I felt ashamed because, again, I should be the superhuman MK in every way imaginable. So lots of wonderful, so much wonderful of growing up in France and witnessing my parents' ministry and witnessing the changes they were making in the French culture. Mm-hmm. They were both teaching in the area of music. And in those days, there was no church music curriculum anywhere really in Europe. And they started the music ministry
at the
European Bible Institute. Yeah. So I loved all of that. And then under the surface, there are all these things accumulating, right? Mm-hmm. Part of what was accumulating, and my mom is okay with me speaking about this, is marriage trouble with my parents that went back really as far as I can remember into my childhood. Okay. They had shoulds too. Missionaries tend to live under shoulds as well, even as adults, and they fought and fought and fought to maintain the image that all was well, and at some point it was no longer maintainable. So they needed to go to England to get some marriage counseling for a year that was mandated by the mission we were with. The problem is Michelle couldn't go with them because it was counseling for a year. So I ended up starting boarding school. My brother had been there for a year already. He's older than I am. And the decision was made by my parents that I needed to go in ninth grade to boarding school. So I was 13 or 14 at the time. I'm right in the middle right now of doing research on boarding schools for a series of articles that I'm going to be writing. And it's a complicated and fraught topic.
For sure.
Brother, it was dream come true. Loved it. Moment of it. Hated it when my parents actually moved out near the boarding school and he had to move home for senior year. For me, it was just the worst situation because I'm a homebody, because there was family trauma happening that forced it.
Yep.
So boarding school was difficult. I was around other MKs and that was good because I realized that I was not the only MK who functioned the way I did and doubted the way I did, right? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, the shoulds came down during that experience with other MKs, which was really important to my faith. But I also continued to realize that my faith had been damaged by so many different factors, and I didn't know what to do to maybe not reclaim it. It's so hard to tell if you really have faith when you're 14.
Right.
Maybe not reclaim it, maybe invent a new faith, maybe discover a new faith. I don't know, but it was really difficult for me. And I went the usual route. I was deeply depressed throughout my high school years. I boarded for 1 year and then my parents moved to Eastern France so they could cross the border every day with my brother and me so we could do school at Black Forest Academy in Germany. So that was great. I only boarded for a year, but still kind of those ghosts of childhood I carried with me. And I was suicidal when I was 17, attempted twice during that year, unbeknownst to my parents, because I was still protecting them. This is what MKs do. We protect our parents from us. Mm-hmm. And I saw counselors who, biblical counseling is good. It was not what I needed at that stage of my life. And reading His Eyes on the Sparrow 15 times a day did not change the course of my mental health. And so I got through high school, graduated, loved so much about BFA, about Black Forest Academy, but still carrying this really complicated, borderline toxic faith inside of because I could not reconcile what I was told to be true about God and Jesus and what my life had looked like in service to God and Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Went to Wheaton College. Any MK will tell you that that transition will be the hardest one of their lives, moving back to their passport culture is what my line of work. Sought some help even then during my college years, came back with a huge chip on my shoulder, as so many MKs do. It's part of the work I do today is helping MKs to prepare for that transition and then to enter well without already, in my case, having these huge negative judgments made about the population of an entire country that I didn't know. But I thought that I did know. that I knew better than they did who they were. Oh, the arrogance of it all.
Yes.
So I got through college, Wheaton College, which ironically is about 10 minutes down the road from where I live now.
Okay.
Yeah. After a year as a screenwriter, returned to Germany, returned to Black Forest Academy, ostensibly to work in the communications department, but they needed a teacher and they needed a choir director and a play director and a French teacher and English and creative writing. Oh, and maybe a few others too. That was day one that I found this out. So it's the missionary story, right?
Exactly. Your
qualifications are having a pulse, and I had a pulse. So they stuck me where they needed me. And I spent the next 20 years thriving as an untrained teacher for missionary kids in Germany. Loved it. Yeah. My first year, because of everything I've just outlined, I burned out by the end of that year. I was doing everything plus all the extracurriculars, and this kind of well of depression came kind of bubbling up under the stress of that year. And at the end of that year, I remember so frequently driving home. So I was living with my parents in France that first year and still going back and forth. And I can so clearly remember driving home on the typical movie French roads with the trees lined up on either side at even intervals, right?
Yeah.
And thinking, if I just turned my wheel a little bit and hit that tree head on, something would be over. I didn't know what it was I needed to be over, because I loved my life. I loved where I was. I loved my students. I loved everything.
Yeah.
And yet this impulse to turn my wheel, right? So by miracles, I'm not going to list for you right now. I ended up in the States that summer, staying with a friend who was seeing a psychiatrist and said, Michelle, I'm going to give you my appointment. Go see my psychiatrist. And I walked in and I gave him he was not in my mission. He didn't know my parents. He didn't know anybody else I knew. He would not be reporting back to anybody who knew me. So I felt safe.
And
I
just, person. Yeah.
Yes. And that's so rare in the world of missions, sadly. Mm-hmm. And I just regurgitated all the stories of my life to him in a very broken state. And the four words that he said after that changed my life. And I wish we could tell more missionaries and MKs this who need to hear it. He said, "Of course you're broken." And everybody else I had gone to all those years had said, well, if you read this verse, or, but God loves you, or if you prayed more often, or maybe it's sin and weakness for you to be feeling this way. Nobody had ever said, of course you're broken. And that changed my life. It changed my life.
Yeah.
I encountered Jesus after that. I had been so traumatized by the image in my mind of God as a tyrannical, disappointed, distant, celestial being whose sole job was making sure I lived up to those unachievable shoulds. That's who God was in my mind. Sure. He's the guy who sent my parents. He's the deity that kept them on the field. He's the deity that made us as a family hide things from the broader community. Mm-hmm. All of that I had attributed to God. When I met Jesus, I could trust this one, you know? So I had to, probably 2 or 3 years, I had to disentangle my faith from the idea of God that was in my mind, the broader God, and really focus on who Jesus was, who he claimed to be, and how the people who witnessed his actual life on earth validated who he claimed to be. This was something that I could hang my hat on. And as my faith grew in that area, I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of listening. I did a lot of mentoring other students who were just one step behind me, probably doing my best and learning along the way. As I learned who Jesus was and began to trust that, I was able then to take my assumptions about God and compare them to his son. If you want to know who God is, look at his son. And those that did not comport with the Jesus I now knew, I knew that I could dismiss. There was something wrong with those conclusions.
Yeah.
They didn't match the Jesus that I now knew. Jesus would not walk down the street and stab somebody and say, now glorify me. Right. And yet I kept hearing that this is what God does to us. All that to say, that was in my early 20s, and it was the beginning of a new faith and a new perspective on life, on myself. It stabilized my view of who God is, made him a trustworthy figure to the point that, I'm so grateful for this, to the point that when cancer struck for the first time in 08, and it struck three times in total in my life, but when it struck then, I knew Jesus. And had I gotten that diagnosis before that transformational moment of, you're broken, had I not known Jesus by the time this cancer diagnosis came, I would have just buckled under more shoulds. You know, you're sick, so you should do all of this, overachieve even in your illness. And God did this to you for a reason. I actually had somebody write to me, write an email to me both times at both breast cancer diagnoses, and there was one other cancer in between, who literally said, God chose you for this cancer for a reason. But I knew Jesus. I know Jesus wouldn't point at me and go, you're going to get this cancer. That's my journey to now. I continue to grapple with the deconstruction that is going on in all realms, including the missionary realm, even parent missionaries, not just children, right? I wrote an article a few years ago where I interviewed a missionary to Italy who had been there for, I think, two decades and had decided that faith was a hoax and had walked away. And then, of course, the number of young adults and teenage missionaries' children that I work with today who are deconstructing is huge. Deconstruction has been demonized. The word has been demonized, but it can be a healthy thing for some of these things to go through.
Yeah, helps people dig a little deeper into what they really believe or how they really see it, and hopefully reconstruct in a constructive and healthy way, right?
So. Yeah. One of my favorite theologians is Sky Gettani, and he calls the act of deconstructing, he calls it unbundling. And he uses the example of when you buy a cell phone plan, it comes bundled with, here's a Dairy Queen card and here's free Apple TV, and MKs and young people in general are being handled this faith that is so bundled with other things that don't belong to the core. Meaning of what relationship with Jesus is. And so what they're deconstructing is all these extra pieces, the social, philosophical, political pieces that have been tacked on. And they're looking for that core relational faith with a trustworthy Jesus.
No, that's beautiful. And thank you. I really appreciate you sharing this journey, which obviously hasn't all been easy. And yet here we are on the other end of some very difficult circumstances. And yeah, and you're able to tell this beautiful story.
But I'm going to pause my chat with Michelle Phoenix here, and I hope that what you've heard has been insightful. As a missionary kid myself, there are parts of Michelle's story that do feel familiar. And I can imagine if you're an MK listening as well, parts of her story may resonate with you too. Michelle's gone on to be an advocate for missionary kids, and so you'll hear more about that in the next episodes. So look for those in your podcast notifications soon. Until then, visit www.missionchats.com for previous episodes and to find out more about how you could help make this podcast sustainable. As always, thanks so much for listening.
Find us online at missionchats.com.